Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And we're going to challenge you to transform your financial future through the principles of the most profitable business in the world, banking.
We believe everyone should be involved in two businesses, the business that you're in and the banking business. Everyday people can replicate what bankers have been doing for centuries to leverage capital and build wealth through private lending.
Join us as we uncover the truths about money, expose lies and myths, and flip conventional financial advice on its head. Here we go.
Hey, Paul. Welcome back.
Hello.
I don't know where you were. Just welcome back. Welcome back to the show.
Well, yeah. I was at work.
Yep, you were. You're still working the JOB.
It can be interesting going back and forth to the Pentagon area sometimes.
The adventures of the Metro line.
Yeah, I mean, I saw two homeless people yesterday sleeping on the train.
That's so in Minneapolis, that's really what the trains are now. And they built this big metro line that goes all the way from like the south end of the city to the north end. And all it's doing is causing cops to now have to patrol the metro.
Yeah. We have metro police here, but you don't see them much. They're usually down closer to downtown DC because that's where all the crime is.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah,
interesting.
Here I am.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
what could have caused these problems in these cities? I don't know.
What do they all have in common? I don't know. Yeah. So Minneapolis, the brilliant city council here decided to, try to force Uber and Lyft to increase the wages they're paying the drivers. So guess what Uber and Lyft are doing?
Increasing the price.
They're pulling out of Minneapolis altogether.
Oh, dang.
Well, because I guess, yeah. So they're like, we can't do that. And the city council mandated it. So they said, we're out. So starting May 1st, no more Uber. So what's that going to do? What does that go back to the true, what is the true minimum wage?
Right. Zero.
Zero, which is what these drivers are now going to be making. Zero. So thank you, city council.
Feel bad for the drivers. People need to vote better.
Yeah, they're the ones hurting. But also, what about all the businesses downtown? Like now, what are you going to do? There's not enough taxis to take drunk people home from the clubs and bars on a Friday and Saturday night. There just aren't.
Yeah.
So now you got drunk drivers on the street. You got businesses getting less revenue because people just aren't going to go to the city because, I don't want to have to drive drunk. So there's no way else to get home. So I guess I'm just not going out. So these idiots, they did the same thing when they, defunded the police and now they're having to pay them twice as much as they used to pay them. So they're actually paying more now. So this will backfire on them. Uber and Lyft will be back probably by the end of the summer when they realize.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
You know, I went on a Thomas Sowell binge back maybe 2018, 2019, reading a lot of his books. And, he always talks kind of about the law of unintended consequences.
And he used to be a Marxist.
Yes. Yeah, he sure was, academic. And
yeah.
But you're supposed to get more intelligent as you age, which means you become more conservative, right?
Yeah. What do they say? When you're young.
Yeah.
You're liberal because you have a heart.
Right. If you're still liberal when you're old, you have no brain, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No offense.
No offense. It's just funny.
Yeah.
We're all... What is it? James says love, peace, and chicken grease.
Love, peace, and chicken grease. Yeah. So we love everybody.
Of course, everyone knows how I am and you are anyway.
But there are consequences to decisions. There's consequences to who you put in office, who you keep in office, who you allow to make the decisions that run your life.
It seems like, and I've been, I've noticed this about myself. Everywhere I go, I always listen to the local talk radio.
Hmm.
Just so I can kind of keep abreast of what the heck is going on. And sure enough, there was somebody who did something to in the town that I live. And my mom would text me, right? I was talking about that with you earlier, but she would text me the news article. And I was like, I heard about that on the radio this morning. Yeah. But you look at the who's elected to these positions, right? These positions of power that affect our lives. It's pretty scary. Like the local school board here.
Yeah.
All leftist Marxist radicals types.
Radicals. Not just Democrats.
All of them.
Like radicals.
Yeah, leftist. There's no such thing as Democrats now.
Yeah, I think people. I mean, I was listening to this stuff today that people just don't recognize their own party anymore.
Right.
So, yeah. So I don't know. We'll see a pendulum swing back to reality and back to sanity, hopefully before too long. But anyway, yeah.
None of them are paying high premium, I'm sure. So
none of them. Not like our clients. Our clients are paying high premium because they get it. They know there's consequences to your actions. Some consequences are bad. Some are good.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
They get it. Well, so let's start with a little YouTube comment.
Yep.
We do monitor these comments, so keep sending them in. But you've got one pulled up there from a recent episode, right?
Recent episode, it was Infinite Banking, How to Cure Analysis Paralysis, which was this week's episode, wasn't it?
Yeah. Or yeah, this last week or a couple of weeks ago when people were listening to this one.
Fairly recent. Yep. all right. So this is from a guy named Paul. Great name, obviously. He says, since Paul, me, has been talking about his construction loan, maybe you guys can broach the subject of using policy loans to pay off your mortgage, pros and cons. Yeah, great question. We have touched upon this, Paul, in a past episode. Which episode is that, Dave?
Episode 26.
26.
Yeah, 15-year versus 30-year mortgage, which doesn't address this question, but we did talk about how we would pay off a mortgage.
Yeah, I want to give some thought to this because it's a good question. It does come up sometimes with people. You know, Paul, what would you do? Or Dave, what would you do in this scenario? I was like, well, a wise man once said, the banker can do whatever he wants. He who has the gold makes the rules. So if you're in a position to do those things, Paul, go for it. You have to weigh the opportunity cost of, is there something more productive that you could be doing with the money you're now throwing at the bank, even though they don't want it any faster, but you're going to do it anyway. Personally, and I keep going back and forth on this, but I think I've landed on this. I'm never going to pay off this house that I'm building.
No.
Right? I'm going in at 6.5%. When rates drop and we create another business cycle down the road here, whenever, I'm going to refinance that thing. I'll pull whatever equity out that I can and stick it in policies. And I'm going to keep doing that until the day I graduate.
Well, I will, I'm not going to get into the details of this, but there's going to be a different way for us to pay off our homes.
Oh yeah. I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's more of an insider conversation that some people may be exposed to here in the future. Right. So episode 26 is really good though, because it really talks about like some people may want to do, I just want to do a 15-year, get it over with, just, you know, own my house free and clear. Well, what if you did a 30-year and put the difference between the 15 and the 30-year mortgage into a properly structured dividend paying whole life policy? We showed you in episode 26 that, you know, for a 40-year-old male average health, by year 18, he'll be able to pay off his house if he chooses to with using the cash value loans he's built up.
Right.
Yeah. If he wants to. And guess what? He had access to all that cash value along the way if he needed it for an emergency or something like that. So, and he created millions in permanent death benefit.
Correct. So I think, Paul, you know, I think I like to err on the side of liquidity. I want to keep my cash under my control. Once I hand it over to the mortgage company, to the bank, now I have to go to them hat in hand, go through this process of you, as you've been listening to, and this is always the real estate investor. They always say, well, just go get a HELOC. Can you?
Can you? Yeah. Is that a guarantee?
No, it's not a guarantee, is it? The only thing that's guaranteed is I have contractual access to my life insurance cash value. I'm first in line.
Yep.
Every time. So, Paul, that's kind of our two cents. Listen to that episode or re-listen to it if you've listened to it already. But again, I like being liquid. I like being under control.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Control.
It's a good question, though.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, today we want to talk about something that comes up in most conversations we have with prospects and new clients is, hey, how do we find premium? How do I find additional cash to fund a premium? Because most people think they view this as, well, now I have to add this premium on top of everything else I'm doing.
Right.
Well, let's think of this from a different, let's view it from a different angle, right? Let's rethink your thinking. And instead of saying this is an added expense, let's figure out where you can actually find premium. Kind of like checking the couch cushions for change to go get a Coke at the store. Like when you're a little kid, like if you look, you can find money that you can put towards your premium. So you have maybe a story of, this is the second week of the segment, IBC in action. So let's do an IBC in action story.
Right. The new segment. Yeah. So this is actually from a budding or new life insurance agent that I'm mentoring in, under, you know, the Nelson Nash Institute program, to become a practitioner. So right now she's one of my mentees. And anyway, long story short, she's retired military, both her and her husband, and a couple kids, and they own an RV, a recreational vehicle.
That's an RV, Clark.
that's right. So they have a, you know, traditional note on it. They're able to, it's one of the ones you could live in this thing, right? So they financed over a long period of time, maybe 20 or 30 years even. I can't remember. It was a long note, like a mortgage. And it's like $1,000 a month. I think that roughly what the payment was. So the question comes up, is it better for me to just take I have the cash to pay this off. Is it better for me to, I'm approved for this policy, dump all the cash, do it like a single premium paid up additions rider, dump all this cash into the policy, plus the premium I'm planning on paying for the next 20, 30 years, right? My annual premium on top of that. And then once the policy's funded a couple weeks later, take a massive policy loan, pay off the bank for the RV, and then the money that was going to the bank now repay and replenish the policy loan. And I said, well, let's look at it. This is a great thought exercise that she's going to have with her own clients someday. And the easy answer is it really depends, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. Like it depends on her death benefit needs at the time. In her particular scenario, she had adequate death benefit in force already with another mutual company. She has some convertible term that addressed her death benefit need. And I was like, okay, I think we're adequate there. Why don't we do this? And because this was her idea, and she had the illustration up on the screen, and I'm looking at it. And I was like, would it be better, you think, 20, 30 years from now, if you had just taken the cash that you have, and this isn't going to completely liquidate them either. They've still got other stuff, other assets. Pay off the RV. Increase the premium by, in this case, it was going to be about $12,000 a year, right? So she was going to be paying about $32,000 of premium now instead of the 20 that she originally illustrated.
And how'd she arrive at that number of 32?
So she was originally budgeting 20, and then her husband was going to have a policy as well. So they were figuring, we can do 20, and then whatever they're going to pay on him. I can't remember what it was. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of like the numbers they came up with, right? And again, we didn't really even dig deep on, hey, there's some other premium in there, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere. But I found this obvious premium. I was like, let's do this. And they have guaranteed income. They've got pensions. They've got VA disabilities. So they're one of the, you know, they've served their country, and they've got this guaranteed mm-hmm. money coming in every month, right? And it's only going to go up.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's look at a policy that has $32,000 of premium vice the 20, same design, same type of policy, same term riders, all things being the same, just more premium. I go, look at where this policy that didn't have this massive lump sum, look where it catches up. It ends up with more cash value, more death benefit, and it's ultimately more efficient.
Because instead of paying lower premium with a big lump sum, you're paying higher premium.
Correct. Higher overall year in and year out premium. Better.
Right.
Which in this particular scenario.
Well, with pretty much all scenarios, a higher premium, you're going to end up in a better position. If you, yeah, putting that money to work.
Yep.
Through higher premium. Perfect. Yeah.
So, and I didn't have to say anything. She just
figured it out.
Figured it out and was like, yeah, you're right. But yep, this was good. It was good training. It was just a good training session, right?
That's good. I had a very similar conversation with somebody who just put a policy in force, and we were going to pay, you know, it might have been $2,500 a month, and then after, you know, with a lump sum. But based on the health rating and the cost of the term that you have to add in order to be able to accept the lump sum, it just didn't make sense. So he brought up, I didn't even bring this up, he brought it up first. He's like, well, then instead of doing that, why don't we just increase the premium and I'll just keep that money liquid so I can pull from it to pay a higher premium every month if I can't meet the monthly premium. So we ended up doing like $4,000 a month instead of $2,500, which is going to end up really, really well for him. Because now he's, I mean, that's significant premium.
Yes.
Relative to his income. And it's going to work out well because it minimizes the term, makes it super efficient. But it all depends. It all depends on your particular situation, death benefit needs, the cost of insurance for you based on your age and health, and you know how much liquidity you need for an upcoming expense or something like that.
Yeah, and overall, I gave this some thought with some new prospective clients that I have that are friends of ours. In fact, the latest are all friends of ours. Is that thinking long range when you're thinking of premium, when you're setting this initial premium up, let's think about what's going to happen. And these people happen to be military post-retirement. Are you done working? Probably not. You don't have the assets, right? Probably not. We're probably going to keep working.
Post-military retirement. So you're talking like mid-40s.
Yeah. Mid-40s, retired colonels.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have $80,000 a year just for waking up pension. And then if they get any other, you know, goodies, you know, from the VA or whatever on top of that, right? So money that can count on.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of my opinion. And these, you know, some of these people are cash heavy. Can you pay that higher premium? Like we've had the pension discussion. My opinion, your entire pension should be premium. I think it's yours to keep and yours to enjoy later in life. And all the other benefits that this product provides over the long term. But, you know, I think people are looking at two smaller premiums for their total income. And this was me and this was you. We all start too small, I guess is the overall point I'm making. Because I just couldn't see it. I couldn't see past this year. Right.
Yeah.
And I thought I got it, but I couldn't see it past this year, the first year.
What's going to make that premium easier as the years go on? Like, because it's a level premium. Premium's not going to increase. It's in fact going to decrease when you get probably into your 60s and beyond. It'll start stepping down, but it's level. Let's just say it's level. It's not going to increase. What is going to make, as the years pass, paying that premium easier?
Well, simply by inflation is going to make it feel cheaper.
Cheaper, exactly.
Yeah.
Because everything else is going to rise in cost, but your premium's not. So it's going to feel relatively smaller each and every year, especially if we go with inflation like we have the last few years, 20%, 30%. Yeah. And then there's your income. Your income's likely, chances are pretty good, you're going to increase your income over the years, right? Look back over, you know, 10 years ago, what were you making versus what you're making today? It's probably a pretty good indication that 10 years from now, you'll be making a lot more than you're making today. So, and then speaking of Thomas Sowell, I remember him saying, I want to say, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the top 10% or something there's only, you know, it's luck or there's only certain people who are going to be able to make it in the top 10%. Didn't Thomas Sowell say something like 50% of Americans are in the top 10% at some point in their life?
Yep, move in and out.
Yeah, but most people, it's probably going to be in your 50s, like your prime earning years.
Right.
Like when you're making more money than you've ever made before in your life, you're going to be in that top 10%. Like half the population is.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure in today's dollars what the top 10% is, but I think a lot of the people that we work with are in the top 10% income-wise, for sure.
Sure.
Easy. Yeah.
Not all, but a lot, because it's actually, I mean, the top 10% is actually probably a lot lower threshold than we might imagine it is.
Yeah, there's a big gap between like the top like 10th of a percent and the 1%, right? Yeah. There's a huge, huge. It's a huge gap in there.
And then a huge gap between 1% and 10%.
Speaking of Carlos Lara's new book, we talked about the perfect investment, the book that I bought at the think tank. And one of the articles from, I don't know, 2018 or 2019 was addressing, I forget which chapter it was, what the even topic was, but he brought that up. And the focus was on actually who pays all the taxes.
Yeah, the consumer.
Right, the consumer, but particularly the top 1% pay whatever it was, 51% of all federal income tax or something like that. Don't quote me on that, folks. I'm just paraphrasing and probably misquoting, but it's something like that. So this idea that, you know, they don't pay taxes or, you know, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe those of us who are making this amount that are considered whatever. Yeah. We're paying taxes.
Yeah. Rest assured, you're paying more taxes than somebody else, and somebody else is paying more taxes than you.
Yep. And we have an episode on how the ultra wealthy pay less taxes than their secretaries. We cover that too.
Right. We're talking about Jeff Bezos and
Warren Buffett,
the esteemed senator, Senator Warren, with her genius on how she thinks Jeff Bezos should be taxed. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, brilliant. Well, so, you know, in the vein of where can we find more premium, like your client, my client, we're able to find more premium. There's other places you can look to find more premium. Most of us think, there's only one play. I mean, like I said, you got to add this expense, right? We got to come up with more money now to fund this life insurance premium.
Right.
Well, zoom out a little bit and take a look. Like I was working with somebody this week. They had like two Roth IRA accounts, two traditional IRA accounts, a 401k, a TSP account, a couple 529s for the kids.
Ooh, love those.
Yeah, right. And you know, pretty much maxing those out as much as they possibly could. So, and this guy particularly didn't want to just go all in on life insurance and leave all of that investing behind. I said, that's fine. You don't have to. But let's take a look at, maybe instead of maxing out, maybe you want to put some of your money towards something that has some certainty, creating some guarantees. So, we looked at that and said, well, hey, instead of maxing out or putting this much percentage into that, maybe I cut that in half. Maybe I redirect some of that. It's actually pretty easy when you start looking on where to find premium dollars.
Yeah, I had this conversation last week with our other friends that are prospective clients as well. And, you know, they kind of came to the conclusion themselves that they no longer wanted to participate in the qualified plan, you know, and then the husband in this case is the is a government employee now, so he gets a match, and I think he might just do, you know, whatever it takes to get the match, the 5% match or whatever it is, and I don't have any real objection to that. But yeah, a lot of times, and this was my case too, I didn't shut off my TSP until, you know, a year or so into this journey. And it was one of our other friends who convinced me or asked me the simple question, why are you still putting money in there?
Yeah.
And I didn't have a good answer.
Yeah. And not that there's, you know, not that you can't still do that, but.
Right. You could.
Yeah, you could.
You could.
But if you want to fund a policy, if you understand infinite banking and you really want to go down that path, you're going to be able to find premium elsewhere. Where are some other places that our clients have found additional premium? I love it when I'm talking to somebody or I just get a random text message and they're like,
escrow.
I just had an epiphany while I was mowing the lawn that I have like three rental houses and I'm escrowing the taxes on all of them, meaning I'm sending the taxes and insurance to a bank for them to hold on to me for 6 months, kind of like I'm sending money to my dad and letting him save it for me, and then he gives it back to me when I need it 6 months down the road. He's like, why am I doing that? Why don't I just redirect that money into a policy via premium? And when I need to pay taxes every 6 months, I just take a policy loan. And now I've got the perfect place to continue saving for the next tax bill 6 months down the road.
Yeah. I love building those dollars into my overall premium that I'm planning on paying anyway with dollars that I know I had. Adding those dollars that are either my tithing dollars or my tax dollars for property tax, or gosh, I don't know. You know, I've had other people that are, we have people at all financial education levels, I suppose, that know that the Roth IRA contribution, for example, their basis, in other words, they can get to. Roth IRA basis is, and of course they ask my opinion. I'm like, listen, you could do what you want with that. I'm not telling you one way or another what you do, but that's been a source of money for some people. They're like, well, I want to control this now. I want to go buy this car, or I want to go finance this whatever.
Yeah.
So people find money all over the place, and they have multiple accounts that are just scattered to the four winds sometimes too, it seems.
Yeah. Like the episode we recently did on there's only one pool of capital. We're taught to silo money everywhere for a very specific purpose.
Right.
And it always
has, is for college savings.
Yeah. And it always has strings attached to it.
No doubt.
Like if you could put your money somewhere where it is required to, when you pull it back out, you can only use it for one very specific thing, or you could put your money, your capital somewhere where you can pull it out and do anything in the world with it.
Right.
Which one sounds better to you? It's not like a 529 is the only place to save for college. It doesn't even make sense to me.
But I did it.
So did I. Because I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. Right? Because nobody teaches you this stuff. Nobody's going to knock on your door and, like they're selling encyclopedias or something and say, have you thought about where you're putting your money and maybe putting it somewhere different?
It's all by design, though, right? It's all... Ooh, I'm a CFP and I have all these acronyms and I've got all these government qualifications, and you're meant to think that this like saving is this big, huge, has to be this complex, it doesn't. That's what I love about IBC, right? And thank you for sending me that book. It's right there.
Yep. Right there in the middle.
Yep. Right there. Is that this simplifies your financial life. This is so simple. Carlos Lara in the book was saying sometimes the simplicity is what gives people the analysis paralysis. They like, it can't be this easy. It can't be this simple. Why?
Boy, because we're trained to think that it needs to be complex.
Right, exactly
like,
right.
Just like when I tell people about some maybe investment opportunities that I'm a part of. They say, that sounds too good to be true because where's the risk? And I say, well, where would you like the risk to be added so you feel comfortable with it? It's because we've been trained to believe that you only can make a reward if you take a risk.
Right. And it's not true.
No. I mean, you can only possibly lose your money if you take a risk. Cause we've done that. We're very good at finding over the course of our lives, finding ways to lose money when we decide to take risks.
Yeah, done doing that.
Yeah.
But you learn. I mean, we've talked about it, like stuff I did in 2017, 2018, 2020, whatever. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even think about doing it now.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch it. Wouldn't even catch my attention.
Wouldn't even consider it. That's right. Wouldn't even consider it. Yep.
No, because one thing we did a poor job of was analyzing where is the risk to this. We were focused too much on what's the possible return, instead of where we should have been focused primarily, where's the risk? Yep.
How am I protected? Think like a banker.
Yep. How am I protected?
Bankers don't take risks. They take collateral.
They do. Yep.
All of it. They take all of the collateral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're going to hedge their bets. So
that's right.
Yeah. Well, so I'm sure as people are listening to this, they're probably thinking of maybe other places you may be able to dig up premium. You know, if you had, you know, maybe it's for some people, maybe it's you reduce your lifestyle a little bit. That's another way to come up with premium, right?
Yeah, those aren't our people.
Not our people because, yeah, most of our clients have their lifestyle under control. Their expenses yep. are not equal to their income.
Correct.
Yeah. And in fact, I've got, what's that?
No, go ahead.
I got one guy who is already planning on how he was going to open the next policy as soon as he gets a raise.
Thinking
long range, because he and his wife do not want to increase their lifestyle, their spending.
Yeah.
Like they're happy with their lifestyle. It's comfortable, right? They don't need to go get a nice car so the strangers down the street think they're cool, you know, to impress. But you buy stuff you can't afford to impress people you don't even like.
Right.
Right.
Nope.
So if you can get over that and not care, you can certainly find ways to reduce your lifestyle expenses and dig up more premium.
That's not the IBC way anyway. People practicing the infinite banking concept, as Nelson taught it, that's not what these people are doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're just not those type of people, in my opinion.
It's kind of funny. It's not like infinite banking doesn't really, when people stumble upon it or are exposed to it, it makes sense to them because in some way they're already kind of doing that in their life. They're already conquering Parkinson's law by not letting their expenses meet or exceed their income. You know, they're already living within their means. Yep. They're just now discovering, hey, there's an even better way to do what I've already been pretty successful at doing.
So, exactly. That's right. The infinite banking concept practiced properly enhances everything else you're doing because you get involved in the business of banking.
Yeah. And there are good fits and there are poor fits, just like the military. Like people always, you know, people who have never been in the military have the assumption that, oh, well, Dave, you're really disciplined. It's because you were in the military, huh? I'm like, no, I was in the military. I was drawn to the military because I was already disciplined. I mean, plenty of people who spent a career in the military and they're still slobs that can't get up in the morning unless somebody's telling them to get up. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, I know people, you know, it's like adult children.
Yeah.
You know, whether they served or not. So it doesn't, that discipline gets created. I think it's just intrinsic. It's not.
It is.
You're kind of born with it.
You're born with it, which is why you're drawn to that service.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like that service turned you into something that you weren't already somewhat already. You know, it just makes you more of what you are.
I think so too.
More highlighting the good qualities, I guess. It makes you more of what you are on the good qualities. But yeah, that's the way infinite banking is. So if you're already somebody who's disciplined, you're saving money, you're investing money, you're planning long range. So you think about what's down the road 10, 20, 30 years instead of just tomorrow or next week, you know, like,
right.
Oh, I got this coming up next week. Well, what's coming up 10 years from now? What are the possibilities that can occur? Are you planning for emergencies? Those kind of people, you're going to be the most drawn to this concept and fit right in. It's going to be an easy addition to your lifestyle.
Yeah. And again, embrace the simplicity, folks. This is not complicated. The other people out there, like we were talking before we hit record, these YouTube channels with these financial people on there with all their acronyms and, you know, certified financial planners and whatever they are, that's fine. Great. Good for them. But they know nothing, particularly on participating whole life insurance. Like, how are you a certified financial planner and you know nothing except buy term and invest the difference?
Yeah. I don't know if that's part of the curriculum. I'm sure they have to get a cursory overview of insurance, but I mean, I know a couple financial planners who know a whole lot about life insurance.
Right.
And they're all
mine
about
did.
It. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of my clients come from a financial planner who knows a lot about life insurance and he believes in
it. I can't believe these people don't. You have to, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
anyway,
it's wonderful.
But yeah. The whole point is, I guess, that I'm trying to make is that these guys make it seem like this is some complicated process, complicated product. Oh my gosh, whole life insurance, it's so complex. Oh my goodness. It's the easiest thing to understand. Yeah. You know what was complicated? Looking at my, you know, the 30 different mutual funds that I was part of when I was part of that one, you know, brokerage firm or whatever you want to call it, captive agents.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of red, and when the market was going up, I'm like, how is that possible? You know, that was complex to me.
Yeah. Or if you want to see complex, get a copy of a universal
life. Well, those are terrible.
Policy. Like, good luck.
Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, I think that's a pretty good overview. So brainstorm, think, where can I find more premium and plan ahead? Like I've got a pay raise coming next year, or maybe, you know, one of the spouses is going back to work because the kids are old enough to be in school. So now we're going to have dual incomes. What are we going to do with that money? Are we just going to blow it and have fun? Or are we going to do something useful with it? So plan for that stuff. Plan ahead and, talk to us. Let's get you ready to go as soon as that happens so you can hit the go button.
Yeah, that's right. You got to be disciplined. You got to pay yourself first. If you want to live a better life later in life, especially, you got to start now.
There you go. There you go. Because where you are now is a result of all the decisions you made 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Over the last 10 years.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's good. We went a little bit longer today, but we had a couple of rants, a couple of soapbox moments, a couple of tangents.
Are we in long form yet? What does it take to be a long form?
I don't
want to
do long form. I don't have the attention span to sit here and talk for that long. So pretty much this is like the most talking I do in a week. And then I kind of go on a talking hiatus. So, you know, Hannah just puts up with, you know, mute David.
Mute David.
Yeah. So.
Sorry, Hannah.
Nod and smile.
Well, you talk a lot though, because you're.
I guess I'm talking all day long.
You're talking all day long.
People, right?
With people that aren't your wife.
Yeah.
Think about it. We talk to other people more than we talk to our own family, probably.
Oh, by far.
Like, no, it's not even close.
Yeah, I think most.
Maybe most people are like that. I don't really know.
Yeah, unless you work remote, and well, everybody's in meetings. Right. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is what it is. All right. Well, hey, have a good week. And hey, you know what? It's actually we're in spring now.
It is spring.
As of yesterday, we're recording on the 22nd. Yeah, yep. It's springtime officially. And we just got a bunch of snow last night. So that's welcome to spring in Minnesota.
Yeah, we're about to get a bunch of rain here. It's crappy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're lucky. You're far enough east. It's not snow.
But south
or south. Yeah. That's
well,
true.
I'm south and east.
Yeah. I'm talking relative.
A few
to
miles that way is the ocean or the bay, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man. Well, enjoy. And we'll talk to you next week. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.